It's been thunder and lightning here. What's your weather like?
Oh, we're kind of okay. It's been sunny spells and light breezes.
Very nice.
Just gave you a five-word weather there without even realizing.
Sunny spells
and light breezes.
Yeah. I miss that those days a bit.
Just looking out the window to give the weather news.
Has anyone been outside in the last half hour? What's it like? In five words. Okay, thanks. I'm going into the studio.
If anyone doesn't know and this ends up staying in, I used to read the news on Spin and I used to give a five-word weather every hour.
Oh, those were the days. You had a real nose for a story in those days. Let's get into this, shall we? Because it's Soul Sister Investigates time.
Well, it's the job we never knew was coming for us.
Yes, it's the obsession I never knew I had. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Soul Sisters, the bonus episode with me, Claire Solon.
And me, Georgie Crawford.
This is the podcast that guarantees plenty of aha moments and healthy, nourished skin with thanks to Sanex. We've been loving the Sanex Skin Therapy Shower Gel lately. It comes in three different options depending on what your skin needs. We have anti-itchiness and anti-irritation designed for itchy skin and containing omega-3, which reduces irritation in just 3 days. There's anti-dryness, designed for dry skin, which contains hyaluronic acid, known for its moisturising power. And we have smooth skin texture, suitable for you combination girlies with oily skin, and contains niacinamide, which is known to help reduce imperfections.
So whichever skin therapy shower gel you choose, you're in great hands. It's developed with dermatologists and its patented amino acid complex preserves your skin's barrier, helps support your skin's natural defense, and delivers a 24-hour hydration feel. Because this year in 2026, we are all about protecting our skin health.
Okay, let's dive in.
So last week, we dived into the world of Alec Murdaugh from South Carolina, and you absolutely nailed the South Carolina accent. Now we're scooting over to the right a bit and we're heading to Boston. How is your Boston accent, Claire?
I would say questionable.
Mm-hmm.
Boston. It's kind
of... good.
It's, yeah, I'm getting there, but I think maybe I'm maybe a little bit more New York City than I am Boston, but I have been, as I've been listening to podcasts about this case, I have been practicing.
Well, we got such an amazing response to Alec Murdaugh that we decided to dive in to another case in the US, which absolutely had us hooked. Now, I didn't hear about Karen Reed until this trial was ongoing, and I'd go on Twitter the odd time and she was always trending. And after a while, I was like, oh my God, who is this Karen Reed person? And that was the day that I was hooked. From then on, I followed this trial. Like with Alec Murdaugh, a lot of it is on YouTube. There's so many documentaries about it. And I think because... similar to Alex Murdaugh, like, it's a story that is just so unbelievable. And we were just saying before we hit record, is full of so many villains. Oh. And so you could debate this for hours and hours and still not figure out who killed John O'Keefe by the end of it.
You sent me a YouTube documentary or a cut down of the best bits of the ID Karen Reed documentary. And after watching it, I was thinking, this woman is innocent. There's no doubt in my mind. And I thought, okay, I need to just dive in and see if I can find something a little bit more neutral. And so I went to Red Handed, which is the crime podcast, and I had a listen. And if you want to listen to that after this, they have a two-part series where they've deep dived on this incredible case.
Yeah, and I suppose in newsroom and in journalism and everything that I studied for my entire life, the whole objective is to stay balanced and neutral, but that doesn't seem to apply to Americans, and they really do pick a side, don't they?
100%. And I think the Red Handed podcast is a British podcast, and they keep referring to the fact that the internet state things as fact. And so many sleuths and so many bloggers jumped to the Karen Reid side of this case and just were publishing non-facts from the beginning.
Yeah. So if you've never heard of this case, strap yourself in. If you followed it from the beginning, I'm sure you've forgotten loads of it. Today, we're going to give you an overview of it and then let you off into the wild to make up your own decision. But it is absolutely fascinating from start to finish. So let's start with John O'Keefe, the man at the centre of it all. He was born on the 8th of December in 1975 in Massachusetts in Braintree, which is just south of Boston. And he seemed like such an incredible person. So he spent 16 years with the Boston Police Department. And the biggest part of his story really was back in 2013 when his sister Kristen died unexpectedly, and then a few months later her husband also died, leaving their two children orphaned. So rather than allowing the children to be separated or raised elsewhere, John stepped up to the plate and became their guardian, and he raised those kids as his own, which is just a remarkable thing to do, isn't it?
Huge, particularly for a man in a situation like that. You know, you really, as you say, her sister probably would have jumped straight in, but for John to do it, it shows the caliber of the man.
Yeah, and he wasn't married. He was single. He was probably in the height of his career, but he made it work. Now, he had dated Karen Reid before, but it didn't actually work out. And they got back together in 2020. And by all accounts, she also had a really good relationship with the kids.
Yeah, she had. She was working in finance and she was also a lecturer in a university. So you can tell by her that she is an intelligent woman. She comes from good stock. And yeah, anytime she talks in the documentary about the kids, she's very loving toward them.
Yeah, and I suppose her personality is real kind of that East Coast American, like straight to the point, like very black and white. But I suppose she found herself being accused of John's murder on a night that almost didn't happen because of a huge snowstorm. So there was really bad weather coming in January 28th, 2022. And herself and John, according to Karen, had a falling out that morning over how much she was spoiling the kids. And he took issue with the fact that he always had to be the bad guy. And I get that, right? Because I'm good cop in our house and Jamie is bad cop. And sometimes when you have to be the one who disciplines the kids all the time, it can definitely cause a bit of tension. So she got up and she left and she went to her house, which is about 30 minutes away, and she decided to work from home that day. And she got a phone call from her dad and he said, "What are you doing tonight?" And she said, "Well, I'm going to go back to John and the kids because if this huge blizzard comes in, I don't want to be by myself for the entire weekend." And her dad said, "Would you not just stay put? Dads always know, don't they? Stay put where you are. Don't drive in the snow." But she didn't listen. And that night she drove to a bar where John O'Keefe was with some fellow police officers and people in the community. And she joined them for a drink at 9 p.m. that night. And there's so much footage of this night from inside the bar, isn't there, Claire?
They have footage of exactly what was being consumed. So, for instance, when I was listening to the Red Handed podcast, the girls from CCTV footage could say that Karen had 9 drinks. 9 drinks. So something like 5 tall tumblers and what looked like shots, small little glasses with limes or lemons on top. What was really evident as I was researching this case was that drink driving was absolutely just normal and a regular occurrence. So these people would drive to the bar, particularly on a night where there was a blizzard expected, and they would just drive home.
Yeah. And she even says, you know, my vodka and soda was in the carrier, you know, where you put your coffee cup in the car. And I suppose there's probably a level of invincibility when you're a cop, especially probably over that side of the world, where they could probably do what they like. Is there going to be checkpoints in a blizzard? Probably not. So they all gathered, and it's a real bunch of absolute misfits in the bar, wasn't it? So we have Brian Albert, which was, he was really kind of this, the main man, wasn't he? He was a Boston police sergeant. And it was his house where the after party was hosted, but he was in the bar with his wife, Nicole Albert. I think their kids popped in for some food. Then Jennifer McCabe was there. She, I think we described someone as a busybody on the podcast last week. Like, she's what I would describe as a busybody. She seemed to know a lot about everybody. She was a basketball coach in the school, and she found herself smack bang in the center of this case. Matthew McCabe was her husband. I think he owned a pizza shop down the road. And then we had a character called Brian Higgins, who was an ATF agent, also a friend of the group, and somebody who had been exchanging flirty text messages with Karen Reid.
Controversial. So this was, this happened. I was wondering on the timeline where those messages happened. These messages had been, had happened while John O'Keefe was still alive.
Yeah. And Karen said, like, you know, her and John, did she ever feel like he was the one? I'm not sure. Was she keeping her options open? By all accounts, it seems that they had a fiery relationship. Mm-hmm. She said, like, you know, he'd go for drinks on a Friday night because he needed to let off steam. So they go down. And actually, before we go any further, have you ever had a drink in America and tasted how strong they are?
Oh, they take free pouring to a whole new level.
I know. So it was after midnight, at around 12:30, that they decided to leave the pub, it was called the Waterfall, and head to the home for the after party in Brian Albert's house. Now, Karen and John got into her car. They drove to Brian Albert's house. Now, this is where the different stories emerge. So the prosecution in this case said that Karen backed into John in her SUV and left him outside of their house to die. And the defense says that John entered the house, was injured inside, and placed outside of the house to die. And this is what the entire case is based around.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, these two had a very fiery relationship. So what Karen alleges is that she traveled with John to this home and dropped him off. She initially said she did not see him enter the house, but then she changed her story and said that she did. She then left and went back to his home where the two kids were, fast asleep. She then persistently called him for hours on end. So up to 10 times an hour, she was calling him. And there's evidence of all of these calls. There's evidence of text messages. There's also evidence of voice notes and voicemails, which are next level crazy. So things like, you're a pervert, accusing him of mistreating her. The feeling I get from Karen was, like you were saying, maybe they weren't that serious, but she was pushing John to get a commitment from him. And when she got drunk, she just ramped up this campaign against him.
Yeah, like what I found interesting is the level. So she says basically that he was going into the house to see if it was okay if they could come in, because she didn't know Brian Albert and his wife that well, and she didn't just want to rock into their house and presume that she was invited. So she says, she said to John, you know, go into the house, make sure it's okay if I can come in. And what happened was he went into the house and she sat there and she sat there and she sat there. And 5 minutes later, he still hadn't come out to get her. And so she drove off in a rage. Now, something that struck me was if she killed John, do you think that she would have called him that many times and ranted down the phone like she did, knowing that this could be used in evidence against her down the line? I mean, if you had killed somebody and you wanted it to look like you were looking for them, would you not just ring them once or twice? Like, she was ringing him like a mad woman.
That's very true. And I hadn't even considered that. Yeah, she was calling him because he was alive. That's the instinct that I have, that he had gone into this party, she hadn't gone, and she was absolutely apoplectic with rage. However, what happens next is she starts ringing around people. So she rings the busybody, Jenny, doesn't she? And she starts asking people, where is John? And she's leaving messages on John's machine saying, nobody knows where you are, John. And people say, well, how did she know that? How did she know that nobody knew where he was, considering she'd left him at a party? Then she gets in touch with these people and these people come to her aid because she is so upset and they start looking for John.
Yeah, so this kicks off at like 5 a.m. in the morning. She gets Jennifer McCabe on board to go look for him. So they get into the car and they drive back to where Karen last saw John, which was outside the house, and they find him lying dead in the snow.
At this point, there is a 911 call made and you can hear Karen. It's very difficult to decipher what's being said, but you can hear Karen being, you know, absolutely beside herself in the background, screaming. But she was asking a very strange question at this point. And on the way, you know, having traveled around with the two women to try and find him, she'd been asking questions like, did I hit him? Did he get knocked over by a snowplow? Why would you ask those questions?
Well, I would think, so for me as like a female in Ireland with Catholic guilt, even if I didn't murder someone, I'd probably be trying to blame myself for murdering someone. You know, so she gets there and she's, and did I hit him? I must have hit him. Oh my God, it's all my fault. Okay. Like, I think that is kind of a normal thing to think. Like, do you blame yourself for absolutely everything?
Not anymore, but I can see what you mean. I can see where she would say she was last with him only a couple of hours ago. They were arguing. And also, we have to remember again, she was really drunk. I heard on the podcast her drug alcohol level the next morning at 5 or 6 o'clock was way over the limit. And she had apparently stopped drinking around 1 a.m.
Wow. So the medical findings, right? John O'Keefe died from blunt force head injuries and hypothermia. And there was a big, big dispute on whether her car caused those injuries. So did she, in a rage, reverse her car at full speed into John and then take off? Or was he killed elsewhere and placed on the lawn of the house?
Okay, so the other scenario is John went into the party drunk to the fellow revelers that he'd been in the bar with. So apparently friends of his went in, and there was a witness that was called to for the defense who saw the case and started reading the details of the case and asked the defense, could she get involved? Now, she is a doctor who has a lot of experience dealing with dog bites. So on one of John's arms, and there was photo evidence of this, there were loads of what looked like scrapes and bites on his arm. And this particular doctor testified and said, the likelihood is these were caused by a dog. Now, the Alberts had a dog, a German Shepherd, called Chloe.
What I got from them all in the courtroom was that they were very cagey, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
obviously, they've probably, you know, Brian Albert has been in courtrooms and police stations, and he was had quite an important job. So he's probably used to this being quite cagey, and he knows how to answer questions. But it just seemed like they weren't being that open. And Karen Reed's defense came in and said, but, you know, why did you get rid of your dog afterwards? Why did you sell your house? And all of these questions that could be a coincidence, but also look kind of suspicious.
Yeah, there was a number of things that happened that didn't make sense. And again, as people from law enforcement, you think to yourself, they took the only option they could do to conceal evidence. So as you said, sold the dog. Dog is gone. Sold their house. Brian Higgins, who was the AFP agent, he had a mobile phone, which could have been used in evidence, but oh no, he replaced his phone. He got rid of it. And when asked under oath what you did with it, did you destroy it? No, I threw it away. And the defense said, you destroyed it then. You got rid of it.
Into Why? The river.
Into the river.
So, Brian Higgins' phone disappears. They said, well, you know, was there tension between John O'Keefe and Brian Higgins? Did John O'Keefe find out about Karen Reed's flirty text messages with Brian? And is that, you know, why a fight broke out in the house, or could that have happened? So there were so many different things. But one of the testimonies that I found the most interesting was Jennifer McCabe. So Jennifer McCabe was the first person that Karen turned to when she couldn't find John. Jennifer went to the house with Karen, and during the trial, she admitted making a Google search that said, "Has long to die in the cold." H-O-S. Long to die in cold. Now, the prosecution's position on this was that she made that search at 6:20 after John O'Keefe's body was found. And in this complete panic of finding John, she Googled this to find out how long he may have been there or how long he might have suffered before he died. Now, the defense, Karen Reed's defense, came in and said that search was actually conducted at 2:27 a.m. Now, if that's true, that would suggest that somebody in that group knew that John O'Keefe was outside that house long before his body was discovered.
Not only was it searched at 2:27, but it was also deleted. Everything we do, do you know, as I was reading about this case and listening, I just thought to myself, everything we do can be used in evidence against us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you think about every single day, these little phones that we have and these little digital companions of ours, they're so convenient, but they will absolutely convict you in a court of law.
Yeah. Now, the digital forensic experts that came in testified that that earlier timestamp of 2:27 a.m. reflected an opened browser rather than the actual search time. So this was a little loophole. She said she got into bed that night and she was Googling the basketball scores. Which, if you're from Boston, you probably do, right?
Absolutely. That makes sense. And so that browser remained open and inactive. And the only timestamp that mattered was when it was opened, as opposed to each time it was used. So if she Googled that at six o'clock in the morning when they discovered John's body and Karen was asking, you know, really upset, asking the question, how long can bodies survive in cold? Then it's plausible that maybe Jennifer didn't Google that until the morning time.
Something else that I thought was so interesting was the Alberts stayed in bed.
Yeah.
When the absolute commotion of finding a body on your lawn. The police came. Karen Reed was screaming. There was absolute chaos going on. Brian Albert and Nicole Albert's bedroom was at the front of the house, and they say they didn't come outside because they didn't hear a thing.
Unrealistic. Even if they had only gotten into bed a couple of hours earlier, you know, because they were drinking, you are still going to be woken up by sirens and that sort of activity on your front lawn, particularly if you work in law enforcement.
Yeah. And what I found, like, and go look for this on YouTube, Alan Jackson is like, okay, so you're a police officer. There is a dead body in your garden and you don't wake up. Your dog sleeps in your bedroom. Your dog isn't barking at the sirens, at the lights going off, at Karen Reed screaming. Like, what were you doing?
That is a great question, and also a reminder that everybody in that household was really drunk that night. So whatever they said and their evidence really could not be taken as plausible because they were under the influence of so much alcohol.
Like last week when you saw that white tent on your road and all the police cars, it was, I mean, you're obviously going to go down and have a look at what's going on.
Completely. And so what happens, that's a good point that you make, because what happened with that was my road was blocked off. So suddenly it became a bottleneck and loads of traffic and people were beeping and trying to get by. So even if you are not alerted by the police presence, you will be alerted by the behavior of the people and the vehicles in the area.
Yeah. So Karen Reed said that she felt really let down by, you know, the investigation into John O'Keefe's death. And she basically thinks that the police officers made up their mind that she killed John and that was the end of it. Now, Michael Proctor was the Massachusetts State Police trooper who served as the lead investigator in the case. And back to kind of that digital footprint, the text messages that he was sending to his friends around the time of this investigation were pulled up and read out in court. And oh my God, they're absolutely scandalous.
That was toe-curlingly embarrassing. Proctor had decided to give his mates a rundown on what Karen looked like. So first of all says, she's a babe. Good body, no bum.
Oh my God.
Then says something like using really disgusting expletives, called her a whack job C, and was incessant in his takedown of her on text to his colleagues and his friends.
Yeah, apparently he was scrolling through her phone and texted his friends and said, no nudes so far. How sick is that? I mean, imagine. But absolutely shocking.
But this, if you look at trying to get a conviction in a case like this and the police behaviour is at this level, you know, imagine the district attorney, imagine the judge, imagine the whole legal community in Canton just thinking, what a sham this whole system is.
Now, back to Jennifer McCabe, who was just so interesting throughout the whole thing. And she gave a real insight into the investigation, Michael Proctor's investigation, and really what was done kind of in the weeks after as they tried to find answers on what happened to John O'Keefe. So she says that she had sent John a text message to say, pull behind me, meaning park your car behind mine at the after party. And she said she was, you know, she sent him messages asking where he was. And she said she was trying to help him find the house and determine whether he was actually going to come to the after party or not. But interestingly, everybody inside the house that night says they never saw John O'Keefe.
No. Everybody said that. And unfortunately, that kind of was ruled inadmissible because they were all drunk.
Mm.
So what Jackson, Karen's defense lawyer, said was, well, if you brought John in the front door and straight downstairs into the basement, those upstairs who were drinking, listening to music, would not have heard or seen John come in.
Yeah. So let's talk about the butt dials, will we? I mean, I've never heard the word butt dials as much as I did in that. And I've never heard so many butt dials happening in a night as there were that night, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the early morning, after the gathering, there were calls between the homeowner, Brian Albert, and ATF agent Brian Higgins. So one call, okay, so we have one call at 2:22 a.m., another call at 2:26 a.m. The defence is like, why are you calling each other so much? Have you just been together at a party? You know, what was the need to call each other? Now, the calls were connected, but they were extremely brief. Like one or two sentences, you know, would have been exchanged in the times that the call went on for. Higgins' phone showed an incoming call from Brian Albert, the homeowner. Brian Albert says, oh, he rolled over on his phone in the middle of the night and rang Brian Higgins with his butt.
Higgins said he wasn't aware that the phone call had come in, but actually had made a call himself back to Albert.
Mm-hmm.
It's comedy levels of lying here, considering these men are police officers.
Yeah. Now, the defence wasn't trying to prove that a butt dial means murder, but they were trying to prove the witness explanations for these calls don't make sense. So what were you actually talking about? Did you actually butt dial? And if you were talking to each other, what were you talking about? And so go and look at it on YouTube, especially this bit, because Karen Reed's team just do a brilliant, brilliant job of making these guys look like, even if they're not, and, you know, they've always said they didn't see John O'Keefe, they had absolutely nothing to do with his death, made them look like they were covering something up.
So let's get to the verdict. As you said, Karen Reed had a really strong defence team. She had invested heavily in these LA lawyers, and they did make both the Alberts and the other witnesses look very poor, and also the prosecution look subpar as well. So let's get to the verdict. At this point, by the way, Karen Reed has a following akin to a pop star online. People are gathering outside court every single day dressed in pink because Karen said that was her favourite colour. People are shouting, free Karen Reed. There are internet bloggers and sleuths who apparently were in touch with Karen and her defence team and getting information they shouldn't have been getting and putting it on the internet.
Yeah. So in the first trial, there was a hung jury, and that is why they had to put on this second trial. And in the second trial in June 2025, she was acquitted of second degree murder, manslaughter, and leaving the scene causing death. But she was convicted, no surprises, of drunk driving. And she received probation for that. So what has happened since? Where's the book? Where's the movie? You know, what is next? Because she, it was like nothing I'd ever seen, you know, the support that she got. And people really believed that she was innocent. And I think as well, they didn't want a woman to be framed by the police department for something that they feel she didn't do. So now, of course, because it's America, we're into the civil lawsuits. Everyone is suing everyone now. So Karen Reed's lawsuit in November 2025, she sued Michael Proctor, Massachusetts State Police investigators Brian and Nicole Albert, Jennifer and Matthew McCabe, and Brian Higgins. She alleges misconduct, conspiracy, and violations of her rights. So that case was later moved from state court to federal court. Now there's a defamation lawsuit against Karen Reed by Jennifer McCabe, Brian Albert, Colin Albert, and Brian Higgins. They're suing Karen Reed and a blogger for defamation because they claimed that Karen and this blogger deliberately promoted false accusations that they killed John O'Keefe and participated in a cover-up.
For the family of John O'Keefe and for those two kids that he adopted, there has been no resolution.
No.
There has been nobody charged with his killing. There has been no explanation given. And what is, I suppose, ultimately so frustrating for that family is that this legal nonsense continues with defamation and people suing each other while John's memory fades.
Yeah, and I think they did manage to, you know, paint a really beautiful picture of him in court, of his dedication to his children and, you know, taking them on. And I think sometimes in these trials, we can kind of see the victim slandered. And I don't think that he was. And it was kind of nice that he was kept out of, you know, the slinging that was going on between all of the parties. Now, just to be clear, all of the people inside the house have said that they never saw John O'Keefe and they deny having anything to do with his death. But I would say that this is not the last that we've heard of Karen Reed.
Karen was also accused throughout the trial of laughing, smiling, joking with her family and her defense team. She was, you know, it was claimed she was too stoic and, you know, she was kind of seeking attention and be it for what she was wearing. She was always dressed immaculately. There was no doubt in my mind that I was quite stunned to see the confidence with which she stood for her, you know, she was unwavering in her belief that she had nothing to do with it. And that is slightly in contrast for me with the woman that she was when she drank and the persistence of the phone calls and the erratic behavior. But yeah, I would really welcome, I would love to hear what you think, Soul Sisters. Jump in our DMs over the next week if you're going to be pursuing this story and pulling this thread on the internet. It will be interesting to see where it ends up.
Yeah, I don't think she did it.
Do you not?
No. And I know we were talking, in, you know, a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, on how good lawyers and people at the centre of these things are at rewriting facts or, you know, creating a story to make you feel a certain way. You know, maybe the group of people in the house, you know, were just taking orders from the top down, like delete your calls, delete your text messages, throw your phones away, because they could find something that could put you in the centre of this when we had nothing to do with it. But at the end of the day, John O'Keefe died in the cold that night, something that could have been so avoided. And he could still be, you know, a dad to those kids to this day. And it just goes to show, when you have 9 drinks and you're drink driving and after parties, nothing good ever happens. Just go home. When the night is over, go home.
Absolutely. Call an Uber and go home.
Well, that was it. As Claire said, we'd love to hear your feedback on this. Thank you so much for all the love on the bonus episodes. We're really enjoying them. I love them. Do you, Claire?
Yeah, I really do.
So good. I was actually at Geraldine and Tilo's wedding on Thursday, and we'd done a deep dive into Alex Murdaugh on like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, recorded Wednesday. So I was at the wedding the next day and I was reading the menu on the table in my head in a South Carolina accent. And I was like, Jamie, I have consumed so much Alec Murdaugh content that the voice in my head has a South Carolina accent.
It's really funny.
Oh, so we'll link that bonus episode from last week in the show notes. It's definitely worth a listen. And yeah, drop us a message and we hope you have a good weekend.